All participants, please stand by. The meeting is about to begin. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to Teck's first quarter 2012 results conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference call is being recorded on Tuesday, April 24th, 2012. I would now like to turn the conference over to Greg Waller, Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, operator. Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us this morning for our first quarter earnings conference call. Before we start, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking information slides on pages 2 and 3 of our presentation package. This presentation does contain forward-looking information regarding our business. Various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. And at this point, I'd like to turn the call over to Don Lindsay.
Thank you, Greg, and good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I will start this morning with a review of the results for the quarter, and then I'll turn the presentation over to Ron Millos, our CFO, to address some more in-depth financial topics. A number of other members of the management team are on the call this morning and available to answer your questions. Starting on slide 5, this was our best first quarter ever, with record revenues and gross profit. Our coal production was good considering the fact that it was the first quarter. Normally we get difficult conditions in the first quarter, although this one was better than most. We produced 6.3 million tons for an annualized rate for over 25 million tons. We ended the quarter with a cash balance of about $3.8 billion, and after using some of our cash for dividends and debt refinancing transactions in the quarter, that was a good number. Subsequent to quarter end, we completed the acquisition of Silver Birch Energy to give us 100% control of the Frontier Oil Sands project. And finally, during the quarter, we completed the highly anticipated QB2 feasibility study, which we'll talk more about later in the call. Turning to slide 6, our record first quarter revenues were over $2.5 billion, up over 8% from Q1 2011, and it was a record first quarter gross profit before depreciation and amortization of over $1.1 billion. Q1 profit of $218 million was impacted by a financing charge of $329 million associated with the debt refinancing transaction, so it is more appropriate to look at adjusted profit. First quarter adjusted profit was $504 million, which was up 12% from last year's first quarter, while over the same period, EBITDA was $781 million. We show our view of normalized or adjusted profit for the quarter on slide 7. Profit attributed to shareholders before adjustments was $218 million. The most significant adjustment is due to our debt refinancing, which resulted in a $329 million after-tax charge. Other unusual items were derivative gains and one-time labor settlement charges related to new collective agreements at our Quebrada Blanca and Andacollo operations in Chile. Adjusting for these items, profit was $504 million for the quarter, or 86 cents per share. Turning to our operating results for the quarter on slide 8, in our coal business, production was 6.3 million tons, but sales were a million tons lower as we have come through a weak point in the global steel production cycle. We certainly see the market improving now, though. The average realized price for the fourth quarter was $223 U.S. per ton, about a 5% discount to the benchmark price of $235 per ton for the premium brands of coal. Usually the average realized price is about a 10% discount to the benchmark price due to the mix of our products, including some lower value PCI and thermal coals. First quarter 2012 unit site costs were $70 per ton, and distribution costs came in at $34 per ton. This gave us combined costs of $104 Canadian per ton. Year over year, we have seen our costs decline by approximately 8%. On slide 9, we continue to move towards our 28 million ton production target from our existing 6 coal operations. As I mentioned, our 6.3 million tons of production equates to an annualized run rate of over 25 million tons. Total material moved in the quarter, combining raw coal production and waste rock, increased 15%. On a year-over-year basis, and it's stabilizing at the rate necessary to achieve our production target. At our Elkview operation, the plant upgrade is now successfully commissioned and running at the forecast 6 million ton annualized run rate, so we're pleased with that. And finally, the feasibility study for the reopening of the Quintet mine is progressing and is expected to complete this quarter. In our copper business unit, on slide 10, overall production was up versus Q1 last year, with cathode production steady and concentrate production increasing. Production of copper and concentrate was up 6,000 tons, primarily due to higher ore grades and better recoveries at Carmen de Andacollo and Antamina. In addition, Antamina's mix of mill feed during the first quarter increased to 63% copper-only ore versus approximately 54% during the same period last year, as we continue to transition to higher copper production. Quebrada Blanca continues its transition from a higher grade heap leach operation to a lower grade dump leach operation, and overall production was up almost 7% at QB versus last year. Offsetting the increase, however, lower feed grades at Highland Valley Copper resulted in a 6% decline in production. We expect production to increase this year in each of Antamina, Andacollo, Highland Valley, and QB. Slide 11 highlights two of the most significant sources of production increase this year expected in our copper business. During Q1, the Antamina expansion project achieved significant milestones with the commissioning and operations of the SAG mill number 2 and ball mill number 4, as well as the expanded flotation circuits for both copper and zinc recovery. With the effect of the expansion starting to kick in, mill throughput averaged approximately 112,000 tons per day, and March in particular was noteworthy, with mill throughput averaging approximately 131,000 tons per day. At Andacollo, copper production increased 8% to an annualized rate of over 70,000 tons in Q1 as it continues its ramp up to full production. We are in the process of commissioning the new 20,000 tons per day pre-crushing plant, which we expect will allow Andacollo to reach the 55,000 tons per day ore throughput design rate. And finally, we are pleased to have ratified new labor agreements during the quarter at both Carmen de Andacollo and Quebrada Blanca. Turning to our zinc business on slide 12, zinc concentrate production for the quarter was down about 11% compared to last year. At Red Dog, lower mill throughput due to harder ore and lower ore grades resulted in lower production. At Antamina, zinc production declined due to a lower proportion of copper-zinc ore. Copper-zinc ore declined to 37% of the mill feed versus 47% last year, as well as due to lower ore grades and recoveries. As in previous quarters, I should note that even though we show Antamina's share of zinc production in these figures, the financial results of Antamina are reported in our copper business. Lead concentrate production was over 10% higher than the first quarter last year as both grades and recoveries improved. And at Trail, production was generally higher, but revenues were down mainly due to lower prices. Overall profitability in the business unit was impacted by lower lead and zinc prices in the quarter. I'll now turn the call over to Ron Mills to address some of the financial issues.
Thanks, Don. I'm on slide 14, where we've summarized our changes in cash for the quarter. Cash flow from operations was approximately $1 billion in the quarter, which is up 14% from the same period last year. A buildup in working capital used $351 million of cash and was mainly due to increases in coal inventories and the timing of royalty and bonus payments. Capital expenditures and investments were $487 million for the quarter. We also completed another liability management transaction in the first quarter involving the refinancing of approximately U.S. $1 billion of debt, and I'll speak to that on a later slide. And finally, also of note in the quarter, in January we paid the 40-cent per share dividend totaling $241 million that was declared in October last year. And after allowing for the effect of exchange rate changes and other items, our cash decrease in the quarter was about $605 million, and we ended the quarter with about $3.8 billion in cash. Slide 15 shows our final pricing adjustments for the first quarter, which are included in our other operating income expense on our income statement. Total pricing adjustments for the first quarter were positive due to rising prices during the quarter, resulting in a $94 million gain on a pre-tax basis. We've also shown the outstanding receivables for our copper and zinc sales, which will be final priced in the second quarter of this year. And remember, when analyzing the impact of price changes, refining and treatment charges and the Canadian-US dollar exchange rate must be included in your calculations. And in addition, when trying to analyze the impact on our net earnings, you need to consider taxes and royalties. Slide 16 shows the maturity profile of our outstanding notes and some of our key credit metrics. As mentioned earlier, during the quarter, we completed another liability management transaction. We redeemed U.S. $1.05 billion of high-yield notes, replacing them with debt of longer maturities and lower average interest rates of 4.2%. And this reduces our annual interest expense by approximately $80 million per year. This refinancing resulted in a $329 million after-tax charge to earnings in the first quarter. We've taken advantage of these historically low interest rates and our investment-grade credit rating to further reduce our all-in interest rates and extend our average term to maturity. As you can see, we've built a ladder of debt maturities across the yield curve, with maturities over the next 10 years in the $500 to $700 million range, which should be easy to either refinance or pay off when they come due. And the average term to maturity, or economic maturity on our debt, is now just over 14 years, and the average coupon rate is approximately 6%. We've also noted the key financial ratios used by the credit rating agencies, and you can see that our balance sheet is in very good shape. I should also mention that we inadvertently posted an incorrect version of our news release on our website for about 2 hours this morning. The MarketWire version was correct, and we have now posted the correct version on our website. The disclosure on page 15 pertaining to the production guidance at our Andacollo operation remains unchanged from the guidance we provided in our fourth quarter report at between 70,000 to 75,000 tons of copper and concentrate and 5,000 tons of copper cathode. We apologize for any inconvenience this may have caused. And I'll now turn the call back to Don Lindsay.
Thanks, Ron. I'd now like to update you on the status of the many development projects we have underway on slide 18. In coal, the feasibility study for the restart of the Quintette coal mine is proceeding with additional work revolving around water management plans. We expect the feasibility study this quarter and the submission of the permit application as well. We expect that the mine could be in production in the latter half of 2013, ramping up to an annual rate of 3 to 4 million tons per year sometime in 2014. At Relincho, we continue to move forward with the feasibility study, and we expect it to be complete by the end of the first quarter in 2013. In our energy division, the Frontier Project regulatory application was submitted to regulators in the fourth quarter of 2011. Review and approval of the application is anticipated to take up to 3 years. The acquisition of Silver Birch will now enable us to add value by moving the project to fully permitted status as quickly as possible. At Fort Hills, Suncor continue with the work required to get to a project sanction decision expected in 2013. And at Quebrada Blanca, the feasibility study for the Phase 2 development is now complete. As part of the work plan for 2012, the social environmental impact assessment is expected to be submitted to the Chilean authorities sometime during the second quarter. I would like to spend a few minutes telling you more about our view of the project. The study estimates a capital cost for the development of the project of about $5.6 billion, of which our funding share would be $4.75 billion. Over the 39-year mine life, QB2 is expected to produce approximately 200,000 tons of copper and 5,000 tons of moly per year. During the first 10 years, annual copper and moly production is anticipated to be about 240,000 tons and 6,000 tons of moly. And over the first 5 years, annual copper production is expected to be about 250,000 tons and annual moly production expected to be about 6,000 tons. So this is very good for getting our initial payback. A key highlight from the feasibility study is the considerable change in QB2's principal resource. The underlying reserve and resource at QB2 has increased significantly, up almost 30% within the design pit alone, and has almost tripled when looking outside the pit design. The two charts on slide 20 help put QB2's resource into perspective. The chart on the left compares QB2's resources to a list of already developed and producing mines, and from this list, QB2 ranks among the top 15 mines. Similarly, the chart on the right compares QB2 to a list of undeveloped projects currently on the drawing board. QB2 ranks number 4 on this list. Takeaway in plain terms, QB2 is a large world-class resource that ranks among leading current producers and is arguably one of the best projects available for development in the near term. And finally, in addition to the feasibility study, approximately 19,000 meters of additional drilling has been completed since the data cutoff date for the feasibility mine plan. We currently expect the results of that drilling, when incorporated, will support the reclassification of additional tonnage from the inferred mineral resource to the measured and indicated mineral resource category. Slide 21 summarizes some of the key design elements. QB2 contemplates the construction of a 135,000 ton per day concentrator using desalinated seawater for processing. The concentrator and related facilities will be connected to a new port by 165-kilometer concentrate and desalinated water pipeline. The 165-kilometer water pipeline will have a diameter of about 36 inches and will require five pump stations to reach the 4,300-meter elevation. The gravity-based concentrate line will measure about 8 inches in diameter. And beyond that, there will be approximately 60 kilometers of pipeline that will serve as a reclaimed water line connecting the tailings to the mine. The tailings facility 2 billion-ton capacity is sufficient for QB2's entire life of mine plan, while port infrastructure will include concentrate filtration, storage, and shipping. Power for the mine will be delivered by a third-party supplier, and those negotiations are ongoing, but we expect supply in early 2016. The table on slide 22 splits the mine plan into three different time periods: the first 5 years, the first 10 years, and the 39-year life of mine. The life of mine strip ratio hovers around 0.48, but as low as 0.10 in the first 5 years. We have made this point in the past, but it is worth repeating. Mining the supergene has in essence pre-stripped the QB2 mine, and this results in a markedly lower strip ratio, particularly in the early years. Cash costs, including byproducts over the life of mine, are anticipated to be around $1.35 per pound. But, and this is important, they will be as low as $1.07 per pound in the first 5 years and $1.12 per pound over the first 10 years. So again, that helps for payback. I'd now like to turn the next couple of slides over to Tim Watson, our Senior Vice President, Project Development.
Thanks, Don. Looking at slide 23, we have and will continue to take the necessary steps to reduce risks and minimize capital costs. By sticking with proven technology and established process methods, we can positively impact the startup phase, as well as limit recovery, throughput, and permitting risks. The decision to use desalinated seawater processing is a good example of this strategy. The choice results in the use of lower cost carbon steel materials that will be less expensive to purchase and quicker to install. The combination of these factors, as well as better metallurgical performance, was the key to the evaluation process. Likewise, the tailing dam uses proven cyclone sand dam technology that is in place at other Chilean mines and results in less upfront construction. The complete tailing system involves a reclaimed water system, has low environmental sensitivity due to the use of desalinated water, and is not near any communities. Turning to slide 24, capital cost risk is something that all new projects have to address, and for QB2, we have an extensive strategy that aims to minimize this risk. At the forefront, we elected to retain world-class and experienced engineering contractors. It is important to remember that we recently ventured down the same path at Andacollo, so our ability to size up and assess scheduling and execution risk is relatively good. Also, early procurement of equipment provides needed visibility in terms of delivery time and price certainty, both of which help to minimize cost escalation. In addition, construction contractors with access to appropriate supervision and direct field labor will allow for flexibility and maximize their craft labor or field productivity. Don, back to you.
Thanks, Tim. So in conclusion, QB2 is a large, low-cost operation in a stable jurisdiction. With a resource base of approximately 17 million tons of contained copper, QB2 is one of the largest potential projects in the world. An exceptionally low strip ratio, especially upfront, leads to attractive cash operating costs over the life of the operation. Furthermore, by sticking with proven technology and familiar processing methods, we have a strong understanding of the requirements needed to bring this operation online. Also, by being engaged at all levels, across contractors to communities, we maintain a clear strategy to minimize execution risks and costs. And finally, beyond the current landscape laid out by the feasibility study, is the near-term possibility to further increase production by 50%. So with that, I'm very excited about QB2 and the progress we have made to bring this project closer to production. So in summary, record first quarter revenues and record first quarter gross profits. Coal production is increasing and moving towards our targeted growth of 28 million tons of production. We've lowered our average effective interest rate with our liability management program. We're increasing our contingent resource in the oil sands through our acquisition of Silver Birch Energy. And lastly, we're continuing to move ahead with Quebrada Blanca Phase 2, a large, long-life, low-cost, expandable project. And with that, I'd like to turn the call over to questions.
We'll now take questions on the telephone lines. If you have a question and you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before making your selection. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to cancel your question, you may press the pound key. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. There will be a brief pause while participants register. Thank you for your patience. We do have a question from Meredith Bandy from BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So, Don, this is a very interesting presentation on QB2, and I'm looking at slide 20, where you have QB2 number 4 on the undeveloped projects. I think, you know, there was talk that you, Don, had been talking about, you know, at 275 copper, you have an 8% IRR on QB2. What do you think is the long-term copper price we need for some of these large projects that are obviously getting more and more costly?
That's an interesting question. I guess I'm conscious that the market has quite a wide range of copper prices that people use. We haven't disclosed any one particular case. We usually start at a case of 250, I think the one you're referring to, rather than the 275, but then we do sensitivity analysis, as you might imagine. We've also done a lot of analysis of what copper prices are implied by the prices paid on other acquisitions of development properties, and most of those have been over $3 by other parties in the last year or so. But what we've done is we've left it for you, the analysts and large institutional shareholders, to choose your own price and analyze the project with your own set of parameters. So you have the key capital and key operating costs and mine life and so on, and I guess you can come to your own conclusions. From our point of view, one of the most important things about QB is its doability, if you like. Mm-hmm. Is that this is a project that we have a lot of confidence in the resource, the technology. It's a straightforward copper concentrator. There's a mine already there, so it's likely we can get permitted within a reasonable schedule. And it's in a very good mining country, Chile, where a country is very, very used to our industry and understands it and supports it. So compared to a lot of other projects around the world where there's some question as to the doability of the projects related to any one of a number of issues, this one looks pretty clean, and that's why we like it so much. If it were up to us, and I don't want to prejudge the board because we haven't put the question to our board to make a development decision yet, but I think Norman and I, if we owned 100% of it, we'd just go ahead and build it, because that's how you build great companies, great mining companies, when you get long-life resources like this. But there are three owners, and we have to finish those discussions before we can make a final decision.
Okay, thank you. And if I could shift gears a little bit to met coal, you've seen an uptick a little bit in the spot price of met coal. Have you felt any difference in your clients in terms of their ability or willingness to take shipments?
Yes, we have. I'm glad you asked that question, but I am going to turn it over to Bob Bell.
Hi, Meredith. Yes, we have seen just in the last while, and perhaps this is because of some concerns over a supply constraint out of Australia. Plus, we've seen increased steel production. The latest figures show actually a pretty interesting increase in March over February. So we are seeing increased interest in from our traditional customers to advance some shipments.
So should we assume more carryover tonnage than usual, or less, or how should we think about that in the next few months?
Well, first of all, the pricing that we've shown on the tonnage that's already been settled, that includes what we understand to be the carryover delivery
okay.
in the next quarter, so that's already built in.
Okay.
I just do want to make a clarifying comment about our disclosure. The last three quarters now, we have disclosed the actual tons that we have sold as of the date of our release,
mm-hmm.
And this should not be confused with guidance. We've noted in a few research reports recently, and you know who you are, that you've been calling it guidance, and all we're doing is saying, here's how much we sold as of this date, so you have the same information we do. From that point forward, we could sell more, or we could have shipments rescheduled. We don't know what will happen. So we haven't been giving guidance quarter by quarter in this market, so I just want to make sure that's clear.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Sal Tarani from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Bob, I have a question on coal also. You mentioned that you have seen some interest. Is that to do with, you think, disruption out of Australia, or do you think there is actual demand increase around the world?
Well, we are seeing increased steel production. I think that's an important development. If you look at the World Steel Institute numbers that just came out, they show the top 10 producers have increased their production 10% in March over February. So we are seeing some signs of demand recovery. But yes, we also believe that a portion of what we're seeing in terms of advancements are because of supply concerns out of Australia.
And our next question is on the coal pricing you achieved in the quarter. That was marginally lower than what you had sold as of early February when you guided that you had sold 5.3 million tons at $230. My understanding is the fourth quarter prices were actually higher, so I was wondering why prices went down at the end of the quarter. Did you sell lower price coal towards the end of the quarter or in subsequent months?
There was a bit of impact. So the 5.3 million tons is what we had sold at the time that we released our previous quarter results. We did sell some additional spot coal, and we did have some delays in contract coal, so that caused a bit of a change in the average price.
Okay, thank you very much.
I just wanted to add that in addition to the global steel production numbers, which are up that Bob mentioned, I think it's important to focus on what's happening in China. And the first 10 days of steel production in China in April were released, and they're running at an annualized rate of 740 million tons a year. And that's a long way from what market expectations were even just a month ago when people thought it was down in the 620 range. So sometimes there can be a complete misread of what's really going on. There's clearly a strong production in China at the moment. And that's an all-time record, by the way.
Thank you. The next question is from Orris Duwalkata from Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Two questions. The first one just on the coal in terms of your unit costs. It's kind of lower than I expected in the first quarter at $70 a ton for on-site costs. You're still guiding for 72 to 78 for the year. Just wondering, what are you seeing out there that makes you think that costs are going up for the rest of the year?
The costs came in pretty much expected in the first quarter. However, most of our maintenance, for example, on our preparation plants happens in quarter two and quarter three. So we expect to see those seasonal variations throughout the year.
Okay, so you still expect to get to that guidance?
Yeah, we're still expecting to meet our guidance, which was between $72 and $78.
Okay. And then just shifting gears to the balance sheet, your net debt to net debt plus equity is extremely low at 15%. I'm just curious, you know, strategically where your management is thinking right now in terms of acquisitions, given that we've seen a lot of depressed equity prices out there, and sort of what, if you could remind me again what your target net debt to net debt plus equity ratio would be in the event that there was something attractive out there.
Well, our target really is the debt-to-debt plus equity ratio, which we like to keep it at about the 30% level. And then the amount of cash that we like to keep on hand, a minimum would be sort of the $500 million at the low end of the range. As we're building up the cash balance, we're looking to pre-fund some of the development projects that Don mentioned in his comments on the slides earlier in the day. Strategically, from an M&A perspective, you know, we're always looking at various items. We'll compare them to what we have on the docket, and if anything looks better than what we have in the development pipeline, we would certainly consider potential activity in that area.
Okay, what does that imply in terms of how much debt you could add right now to get to that 30% threshold, if you wanted to?
we don't have a lot of room right now to get to the 30%. You know, our debt equity ratio is in the high 20s right now, so very little room at this stage.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to return back to QB and a couple of questions. One, sustaining capital. What kind of number are you looking at for that?
Greg, we're just looking through some pages here between Tim Watson and Roger. Can we get back to you on that in a moment?
Yeah, okay. Well, Don, what about the expansion? You say double production. Do you actually mean going to 400,000 tons a year of copper?
What we said in the presentation was looking at a 50% production.
Oh, sorry.
The resource is there to be able to do that over time, because remember, what we've disclosed today is only part of the overall resource. But, you know, right now we're going to stay focused on getting the first phase in.
So when do you think
I think Roger's going to comment on this as well.
Greg, thanks. This is Roger, Roger Higgins. I'll comment qualitatively, but just point out a couple of things. The mine at Cabral Blanco already exists, and we have a mix of some relatively new equipment in there, as well as some of that's a little bit older. But we don't have a great demand for sustaining capital out of the mine because we're not building because we have something operating there. So there's nothing there in the first few years of any significance, two or three trucks. And of course, a new concentrator means that we don't have anything great in that area either. We will have some work to do around relocation of facilities as the pit expands over the first 5 years or so, because it does expand through some of our existing facilities, such as truck shops and camps and offices. So there will be some of that later on, but in the short term, the sustaining capital requirement is modest, but I can't actually give you a number. We'll have to dig something out for you.
Okay. And Don, I guess Meredith's question was, what would make you move ahead on this project? Or you kind of implied you already would. But what target IRR do you need to justify the project, either leave it or unleave it?
Thanks for the question. As you know, we don't usually disclose that, but I'll put it this way, that we looked at we did a number of scenarios, different financial runs at different commodity prices, and generally using threshold discount rate of 8% real, just to see what the resulting NPV was. And as I said before, if you use 250 copper, you know, it's positive, but it wasn't that exciting. But if you use $3 copper, it's fantastic. So that kind of tells us that it wouldn't take much, many years at a reasonable price to earn quite a good IRR on it. One of the things I noticed in this recent period of weakness, the lowest copper got was $3.06. It's currently still over $3.70, and geologically it seems fairly challenged around the world. The top five publicly listed copper companies all had reductions in production last year, despite the fact that copper was over $4 a pound for 9 months of last year. The country of Chile, the largest copper producing country in the world, its production was down last year by 4%. And meanwhile, demand worldwide continues to increase, sometimes at larger rates, sometimes at smaller rates, but continues to increase. So we think the outlook for copper is pretty good. And we know this, that in the commodity business, that it never actually runs as a flat line, straight IRR calculation. It's a very cyclical business. And you tend to get all of your money back in two or three good years. And you never know when those two or three good years are going to be. Is it when the mine opens up, or is it 5 or 7 years later? But you do know that if you have a 39-year mine life, and I suspect much longer given that we've got more resources, that you're going to have several cycles when you get those two or three good years. And when you do an IRR calculation using that, this looks very strong.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. The next question is from Garrett Nelson with BB&T Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks very much. Your coal production was well ahead of sales for a second straight quarter. If I just take the Q4 and Q1 differences between production and sales, that implies an inventory build of about 2.1 million tons. Could you comment on your current inventory levels? Are you currently experiencing any storage issues or seeing any backup along the supply chain where you might have to dial back mine production, or has customer demand improved in recent weeks on the Australian situation and strengthening in steel, Asian steel production, to where you're confident you won't have to moderate production?
Good question. I'm going to turn it over to Ian Kilgour, and then I may have a comment after that.
Okay. Yes, our inventory levels are higher than normal. We have healthy inventories both at the ports and the mines, but that actually puts us in a very good position at this time in the cycle when we do see increasing demands from our customers. So that we're managing that inventory, and we're going to be taking advantage of it as the year progresses.
Okay.
The only comment I would add is that it is true we've had a couple of quarters where we produced more than we sold. I would venture to say, and this is going out on a limb, but we do have our forward-looking statement slides, but it wouldn't surprise me if this quarter we sell more than we produce. That's the sort of how it's unfolding right now.
Okay, I know we're only through one quarter, but given those inventories and your production rates over the last couple quarters, you know, through the winter months, it appears that your full-year coal shipments could very well come in above the high end of your production guidance for the year. If, in fact, the demand is there, would you say that's a fair assessment?
I don't think I'd want to venture out on that limb. That's just too far out, and we don't know.
One final question. Were Q1 coal shipments affected at all by maintenance at West Shore?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
West Shore had an outage for about the last 8 days of the quarter, which extended into quarter two, which is part of their expansion program to increase the capacity from 29 million tonnes annually to 33 million tonnes, a very important capacity increase, and as part of that they were required to shut down their dumping facilities to allow work on the chutes, which convey the coal from the dumper to the ship loaders. So we were affected by that. West Shore is now back and operating at full pace and handling our coal well.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Oscar Cabrera from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Getting back to Quebrada Blanca, Don, if the board approves the project, and it sounds sounds very positive, what would be the amount of capex that you guys need to spend to get the project started in 2016?
Well, you would start with the result of the feasibility study at the 5.6, which is in dollars of January 2012. And then throughout the course of construction, there's going to be escalation of some sort. Hard to predict what the inflation rates will be, but you know, make your own choice and put that into the model. There is a contingency within that 5.6, of course, and we'll all be watching Tim Watson and Roger and so on to try and make sure they don't use it all. But you'd have to judge by experience of other projects as well. So you know, the short answer is we don't really know, but those are the key parameters right now.
You think you'll do the traditional 20-40-40-20 to get started? Would that be a fair assumption?
That by year 20-40-40?
Yeah, on years, yes.
Oh. So they're building their model. They want to know how much to put in each year.
Roughly, yeah. That's
roughly, yeah.
Yeah, 20-40-40-20.
We'll go with that, but we haven't been asked the question that way before. So next time we'll have a more specific answer.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And then, you know, interested also in your comments about a statement you make in your release about the possibility of bringing a funding partner. Would that be an off-take agreement, or can you expand on that, please?
Hard for us to expand right now. We're having detailed discussions with the two partners. Each have a different position and kind of different objectives, and they have to make their own decisions on what they want to do. So we wanted to make sure in the disclosure that we covered a variety of options that could occur, and we hope we can get it settled in the next couple of months, but we don't know where they're going to end up. It's really up to them.
And then just lastly, can you remind me, would the Enami share be a carry? Or you know, would you need to carry them? And what about the private Chilean company?
Yes, that is correct. Enami has a 10% carried interest, so we are responsible for 85% of the financing, and the Chilean private company is responsible for 50%.
50%, okay. And one more question, if I may. On Quintet, you are talking about spending or making lead orders for the equipment. Are you spending any money from Quintet in those orders this year, and how much would that be?
Over to Ian or Tim, if you want.
Yeah, we expect to spend around $340 this year. Our plan is to aim for production at towards the latter half of 2013. We, in fact, have now submitted the Mines Act permit amendment application, and of course, our progress will depend on the approval period for that. And basically, if that proceeds as we hope it might, we'll start further works at site in the last quarter this year, and which will hopefully give us first coal by the last quarter of 2013.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from John Hughes with Desjardins Securities. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks, Opry. Just a couple of quick ones. Were there any Class B shares purchased for cancellation in the first quarter?
Yeah, a very tiny amount, about 200,000. We've done 5 million so far, John.
Okay, that's great. And in terms of a summary of the feasibility study for QB2, is there anything else available outside of what's in the quarterly release?
There will be a 43-101 report filed sometime in the next 6 weeks, probably at least a month from now.
Okay. So what about any economic reviews, or is that pending following board decision type of thing?
Well, we have all sorts of scenarios that we run, and I guess we finally come to the conclusion that you're going to come up with your own copper prices and models, and so we've left it to you. And we won't be disclosing our actual runs. We've disclosed the key inputs and then let you do your own numbers.
Okay, last question. Just on the balance sheet, that financial and other assets account, the one that was up $324 million in Q4 and another $168 in Q1. Don, can you provide any color at all on, you know, the number of investments, specifically on the publicly traded investment side, any type of color at all in terms of why this account keeps going up?
Same answer as before, I guess. From time to time, we make investments in situations we believe are undervalued. They could become something strategic. Most of them don't, and we may then sell to take a profit, and this is no different than anything we've done in the past.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from David Charles with GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Just a question, if you could, on the coal price visibility going forward. I'm just wondering, Don, you've laid out some scenarios with increasing production in China, et cetera. I was just wondering what scenario would have to occur for coal settlements in the third quarter to be below $200 a ton for met coal? I'm just trying to get some sort of a feel as to, you know, what's the upside and the downside on met coal prices.
Well, I think it's sort of the normal things that you would think of. If the global economy turned down, and in particular related to industrial production in primarily in emerging markets. Remember that business is just driven so much by China, where steel production is something like 8 times larger than in the U.S. And then emerging markets, you add those in, and that's just become the big factor. I know that financial markets tend to focus, of course, on the U.S. and Western Europe, and that tends to drive sentiment because they think that's sort of what drives commodities. And historically, of course, it did, but not anymore. The world has changed, and the other economies are carrying on. But if they turn down, and of course, we've seen situations like that happen on different occasions in economic history, 98 was a big one, then that would reduce demand. And, if you have more supply than demand, then prices turn down. At the moment, we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing steel production turn up, and some difficulties on the supply side in Australia that you've all heard about. And obviously, they will eventually resolve those things. But for the moment, we see quite a positive tone in terms of customers contacting us to accelerate shipments. How long that will last is very hard to tell. So we always monitor it quite closely. I'm sure you will too.
Yeah, maybe just to slightly change that. That's a very good answer. But just maybe to change it, do you think that there's a, let's say, 50-50 chance that the number could be below 200? Or do you think at this point in time it looks like it would be less than that?
As you might expect, I do not think there's a 50-50 chance that it will be below 200. I kind of think we're past the bottom. The spot price is up a good $10 or more, and we've seen increased demand for shipments. So that looks good.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Kerry Smith with Hayward Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Don, for this 50% potential expansion of QB on the sulfides, did you guys do any work at all to think about roughly what the CapEx might be for something like that and how it might be? Would it be like an expansion after year 5, or did you think about it conceptually in any way that you can give us some input?
I really do appreciate that you'll all be trying to develop your models for this and build in expansion in some year with capital. We just haven't got there yet. We really want to finish the discussions with the owners and get on with the first part. And once we get through that, then we'll start thinking about it. But you sort of want to stay really focused on executing well. I mean, one of the points to make about this project is that it's really doable. But for it to be doable, we have to stay absolutely focused on executing cleanly. And that's why we have a couple slides in the presentation today that show you how we're managing the execution risk. And Tim Watson's got a real plan on that. And we had him down on the analyst tour in Chile to be able to speak to a number of you face-to-face. Because to me, when we do resolve the ownership issues, the discussions, then being absolutely focused on executing this one cleanly is really important, much more important than spending a lot of time on the expansion phase too soon. But we do signal that there's such a large resource there that this is the kind of deposit that once built will likely be expanded a couple of times during the course of its mine life, which we believe will be longer than 39 years, given that we have additional resource there. So that's one of the reasons why we like it. So all of these things are kind of judgment calls. But when we look at QB2 compared to a number of projects out there in the world that, and we spent a lot of time doing that. We looked at over 400 projects around the world before we really finished this, and had three different sessions with the board on it. But when we compare all the risk factors, this one, the risks, they appear quite manageable. We're building a copper concentrator, and we just built one, at Carmen de Coyo, so we have a lot of experience to directly apply to that. And I think this is just going to be an intense focus on executing cleanly on this one, and we'll get to the expansion when it's the right time.
Right. Okay, the only reason I ask is obviously the NPV would look significantly better with a 40-year mine life to expand it.
Yeah. What I'd say about that, because you're absolutely right, and I appreciate that. But that NPV today is still going to be just a fraction of what the NPV will be when the first phase is built. As NPVs work, you know that you do the arithmetic today and you're going to get a pretty low number because you're just starting the phase where you're spending all the money. I'd love for people to do the NPV in 2017 of what just you know, the first phase looks like, because it's pretty good. And then if you do the expansion after that, it gets even better. So this is why we'd love to be able to snap our fingers and have this project built and have it in our portfolio, because we know we're going to love it for 50 years in this portfolio.
And Don, how much contingency is built into the $5.6 billion as a percent or as a dollar amount?
13%.
So 13% of the 5.6. Okay. And is it a full four, maybe Tim can answer this, is it a full four-year build for that project?
Yeah, the actual, when we look at the development cycle, we're into the basic engineering phase of the project right now. We obviously can't go to the field until we receive our SCIA. We have certain assumptions built into our program on the approval cycle time for the SCIA, but we, should the project be approved, we do expect to be in the field the second half of next year.
Okay, and so if you're in the field by the second half of 2013,
it's a three-year build time.
It's a three-year build time, okay, which would be the back half of 2016. Then. Okay, okay, okay. That's great. Thanks very much.
You know, I just add another comment, because I was just at QB on Thursday and speaking to groups of employees and touring the site, and a number of you won't have had a chance to be there recently, although. We had the tour of Carmen and DeCoyo and Antamina just, I guess, a couple of weeks ago. But we will get something organized in the future. But as you stand on the lookout, you can visually see a dome of mineralization that is already exposed by the current mining operation. So very, very low strip ratio, almost nothing. And it has a copper grade of you know, 0.62 to start, and you compare that to what we've been mining at Highland Valley, which is 0.22, and the moly grade is three times what Highland Valley has, and this is what we get to start with. And I think sometimes it's important to just go there and see it, and you know, the terrain is very easy to work in. It's not like some of the other projects around the world. The elevation is 14,000 feet plus, of course, but that does mean that there's not as much sort of environmental challenge as if you were in the heart of a rainforest and various other things. So, and of course, we're operating there, and Collahuasi's operating that next door. So all this combines to help it be a doable project. I think as people look at these projects around the world, just looking at all of these factors combined and ask the question, is this doable, is a really important question. Because the mining industry is being challenged worldwide to even just keep current mines operating at the current production levels, let alone do brownfields expansions or even a greenfields project. We've seen you know, company after company report declining production because of head grades going down and that sort of stuff. So when you look at everything in that context, you know, we feel QB2 is very doable, very manageable. We obviously already have our share of the equity financing on the balance sheet, so that's not an issue. And so it's something that we'd love if it was just built already and in the portfolio.
Thank you. The next question is from Brian MacArthur from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just one last question on QB. When you look at this, what sort of tax rate did you assume in your analysis? Did you assume, you know, money's repatriated or reinvested in Chile, and did you credit any of the other operations against it, or would you just look at it as standalone?
Yeah, we use the current tax regime. We do sensitivity analysis again, as you know, and we have our tax specialists that have been following the Chilean tax developments and what might change in the future. But Chile does have the advantage of, if you invest cash flow generated Chile, then you pay a lower cash tax rate during that time. So that does help in the early years.
But we did not assume that in the model. In our model, we did not assume reinvestment of profits from QB. It was viewed on a standalone basis.
But of course, Brian, the amount of the capital spend results in a fairly large depreciation tax shield in the early years anyway, which obviously has a big impact on the cash tax payable in the early years of the project.
Right, but we're not taking profits from current QB and crediting them or anything like that, or bringing Carmen Dan de Coya in. Right.
No, we don't do that.
Okay. And then obviously if and when you did an expansion, obviously you'll get the benefit of redoing that again. So theoretically, as we go on in a longer time, you'll be able to maintain a structurally lower tax rate, assuming nothing changes.
Right.
Great. Second question, just something totally different, and I apologize. There's a statement on page 22 talks about this whole thing in Lake Roosevelt, and I'm not a lawyer. It says, striking or affirmative defense of apportionment and circular litigation, and I just have no idea what that means. Can you elaborate a little bit on where we stand on that?
Peter Rosie would love to answer that question.
Sure. That finding is a setback in the litigation. Apportionment is a doctrine that lets you reduce your share of CERCLA liability to a portion of the total remediation cost, total natural resource damages. We're appealing that finding. We think there are some fundamental legal problems with it, and it's too early to say whether the appeal of that issue will hold up the rest of the proceedings, or whether we'll have to wait until the liability phase of the trial is over to appeal the whole thing. But it's a significant finding. The good news is that our RIFS work on the Upper Columbia continues to be very positive, and the results of the science are showing that there may in fact be very little remediation required. So we're encouraged by the facts and discouraged by the legal outcome on that one issue.
Right. So nothing changes in what you're doing. You still continue to do the work you're doing, whatever. This is just going to go through the courts for a while. I don't know how long it'll take, and we just proceed on in the near term like we've been doing. Is that fair? Or?
That's exactly right, and we don't know how long it will take, but longer rather than shorter is a good guess.
Okay, great. And one other final different topic altogether again. Just you mentioned on Trail that, you know, the margins changed there because you're paying more for silver. Is that as a result of just terms have changed, or is it just a change in mix of product going into Trail at the moment that led to that?
It's Rob Scott speaking, Brian. It's simply just rising silver market prices. So that we pay for the concentrate on the price of silver acquired. So in a rising market, when silver prices rose last year, cost for those concentrates that contained silver rose.
Okay. So that whatever the margin or whatever, that's just a flow through thing. It's not like we're getting different types of cons that have different contracts on the silver or anything like that.
No, that's correct.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Terrence Ortland with TSO and Associates. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and thanks for all the details. Just coming back to QB, Don, did you just say a few minutes ago that the cutoff is 0.2 for those numbers that were tabled today?
No, I was comparing the dome of mineralization in QB that's already exposed, and its grade to what we currently mine at Highland Valley Copper. And my point being that QB in the first 5 years is not quite triple, but substantially higher grade than what we're mining at Highland Valley, where we're making good money.
Okay. So what is the cutoff that go along with those numbers? Well, you're looking at that also, I wanted to go on to ask you about the power costs assumed and what percent or pie chart is the power cost for the C1 cost that you guys had?
Okay, so we got the power cost question and cutoff grades.
Cutoff grades based on an NSR principally, so rather than a price of copper. Normally don't put that out there. It depends on the mine plan at the time. Power costs were in negotiations there that would appear that costs are going to come in the 10 or 11 cents range, but we are still in the process of determining what that will be.
That's a pretty good number. And availability and the availability of power, is it there? Or do you just make an assumption that it will be available sometime with the expansions and all?
We expect that there will need to be a construction of a power station in the north, and that's the nature of the negotiations we're in.
Okay. And may I ask you, how much power are you going to be using once it's cranking up this thing?
240 to 250 megawatts.
How much?
240 to 250 megawatts.
Well, that
includes desalination. That includes pumping water from the ocean to altitude. It includes the mills. They're the big requirements.
Okay. One quick question on the quintet. I was going to ask you if the feasibility study, once it comes out, what's next? I guess the answer is, you know, kind of a foregone conclusion. You guys going ahead with this 2013 fourth quarter startup. What's the ramp up again? Could you remind me, please, on the quintet beyond into 2013 onwards?
The ramp up on quintet.
Basically, we'll be ramping up starting coal production in the fourth quarter through 2014, getting towards the 3 million mark towards the end of 2014.
Okay.
And that's our final throughput rate.
Okay. Thanks again. Thanks for the details.
Thank you. The next question is from Oscar Cabrera with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my second question. And you're just getting back into Quebrada Blanca, if I can. You know, two of the main bottlenecks in the northern part of Chile right now is power and skilled labor. And so, you know, the first thing is, you in your presentation, you talk about third-party power with permitted sites. Is one of these sites Mejillones, or can you tell us what sites you're considering for your power contract?
We're in discussion with a couple of different parties, Oscar, and we just like to leave it at that because we're in negotiations at the moment.
Okay, let me ask it a different way. If when you talk about permitted sites, does these sites have environmental permits already?
That's correct.
Right, so you were just talking about right of way.
That's correct. We're working on the right-of-ways ourselves, and the power transmission line is, in fact, in our CapEx numbers, but the power station itself is not.
Helps. And then the second question, I guess, more, you know, looking at Relincho. Obviously, you know, there's one example right now in Chile with a plant using salt water, and you obviously have been very cautious about the way that you are developing your project. How are you thinking about the development of Relincho? You still think that this can come right on the back of Quebrada Blanca, i.e. if you start production, like you just mentioned to one of the previous callers, in the second half of 2016, can actually Relincho, you think, come on stream on 2017, or has all this process changed your way of thinking on that project?
I'm going to make a comment and then turn it over to Tim for more detail. But that kind of decision we wouldn't make for at least a year. We want to see the results of the final feasibility, and we want to see how much progress we've made on QB2. Remember, we haven't made the final go-ahead decision on QB2 yet, so if it gets delayed quite a bit, you know, anything could happen in terms of the timetable or the order between QB2 and Relincho. If it goes, you know, like we'd like to see it go, we will be very careful about how much we stagger QB2 and Relincho in terms of people available to really be focused on the project, that we got to be cautious about biting off more than we can chew, and also looking at the financing of it as well. I'll then turn it over to Tim related to the seawater flotation of that stuff.
Thanks, Don. With respect to Relincho on the seawater issue, right now we still have extensive test work programs underway, metallurgical test work programs underway, and we are actually analyzing pilot plant work in both seawater
and desalinated water, so that as we come through the costing phase of the feasibility work for Relincho, we can actually do a detailed analysis of the of both options. And at the end of the day, it'll come down to what we fundamentally believe is the lowest risk option for the project, and to also in terms of then providing the best rate of return. So it'll be a combination of de-risking the project and copper recovery and what we fundamentally believe is the best option going forward. But we are looking at both options, and we continue to pursue the seawater option along with the desal option.
And can you just remind me, I don't know if you mentioned this, and in the scoping study that you provided a CapEx for, was that done with desalinization, or was that assuming seawater usage?
The previous information that we had released was on the basis of seawater.
Okay. Great. Thanks again.
Thank you. The next question is from Greg Barnes with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
I'm fine. My question has been answered. Thanks.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting back to Mr. Lindsay.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for your time this morning. Maybe just a summary comment that, you know, tech as a company is in very strong condition. The world has been in a reasonably fragile state for a couple of quarters or more. But we do see a number of positive signs underneath all the noise in the media and so on that point to a better quarter, at least, in terms of our coal business and sales versus what we've seen the last two quarters, and certainly stronger steel production across the board. So that's encouraging for the future. We will continue to stay focused on trying to finalize discussions with the other owners of QB so that we can provide clarity on development decision and timing, but it could take a few weeks or months, depending on how long the discussions last. So we'll look forward to talking to you again at the end of the second quarter. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Goodbye.
Thank you. The conference has ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.